One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to the Speakeasy, the officially unofficial podcast for Boardwalk Empire on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And tonight we're talking about Season 5, Episode 4, entitled Quantro.
Quanto.
I'm thinking of the alcoholic beverage, Quantro.
I don't know what
the
you're
The one
thinking.
That goes, it's the triple sec replacement in a Long Island.
Is it,
you want to get fancy.
Sounds
I
like
think.
It should be Fortro sec, since it's Quantro.
It's similar to like Grand Marnier, I think. Not certain.
Anyway, Quanto, how much? How much money?
Is that what that means?
It is. How much money is it going to take for Miss Wheat to escape with her life? How much money is it going to take for Margaret to get out of hock with Miss Rothstein?
I don't think there's a number for either of those.
Mm.
Although we know the number, $111,000 at a quarter on the dollar.
No.
So somewhere around $25,000 to $30,000.
Yeah. I thought I had like a $40,000 number in mind.
I don't know. They said a quarter on the dollar.
Yeah, you did.
And the number was 111.
Take 25 cents on a dollar.
Yeah.
So this was written by a three-person writing team, Howard Corder, Christine Chambers, and Terrence Winter. Again, I associate multiple writers with clusterfucks.
Yep.
I'm wondering if they've got some kind of division of duty here, like some one person is writing all of the little Nucky flashbacks.
Huh. Interesting.
And,
I don't know, because I feel like you would want those two pieces to tie together pretty well, pretty seamlessly, right? Like you want the stuff that we're seeing with young Nucky to reflect in the stuff we're seeing with old Nucky.
Sure.
I don't know if splitting them up. I mean, you know, you could split up the writing and then they work together, I guess, like consult with each other. What are you doing on the young Nucky stuff? Oh, well, I'm doing his father's. Getting
you
some
know,
fucky.
It would just be really hard to say, like, all right, eight writers, you all get 2 minutes a little Nucky, and you got to make it a cohesive thread. Whereas you could definitely give a script to seven other writers to be like, this is what's going on, this is the thread. And I know that Christine has been mentioned in several podcasts. I just wonder if that's what they're doing. They're dividing up that.
Maybe so.
Let's get right into the episode. We see summer's winding down. It's getting to be September. It's getting to be fall in whatever year this little Nucky stuff is taking place. He's forlornly sweeping the steps that nobody's walking on. He gets called into the Commodore's office and has some, future crime boss, future city boss syndicate's advice fostered upon him. He sees a little bit of child porn. He gets fired. Bam, bam, bam.
Well, he walked in the room like a question mark. What do you want?
Yeah.
If he walked in there like an exclamation mark, even maybe a comma, he might have been okay.
Uh-huh.
No.
What do you think about some of the stuff that is happening here with Nucky? He's getting advice about, you know, he's almost actively being asked to strategize with the Commodore. Right before he gets kicked out of the door, what is this guy's game? Yeah, obviously
I don't know.
The foreshadowing of the kind of, you know, extremely young girl. I don't think it's porn exactly. It's just inappropriate stuff. That's obviously supposed to foreshadow Jillian. Do you think these are like the Commodore's personal conquest? Is this like a catalog he's ordering from? Is this his jacking material? What's going on?
I'm going to say
all of the above.
No. I think it might be his conquest. That's disturbing, but I don't know. Why would he have a bunch of pictures laid out on his desk?
Yeah, because I guess I never had the impression that the Commodore was a serial child molester, although that makes perfect sense. You don't usually take a 12-year-old girl to bed and be like, oh, yeah, you know, that's an experience. I don't need to repeat. That's something you kind of do as a compulsion or something screw loose in your head.
Sure. It's creepy. Whatever it is, it's disturbing.
But why would he ask Nucky his opinion on, you know, reading the maps, discussing in a very what he thinks is progressive for the time way, what he's going to do with the colored people and how they fit into Boardwalk? Why is he doing this with Nucky just to, toss him out the door? Is this some sort of weird shit test for him or what?
Well, I assume that he's probably the guy knows that Nucky will be back next year, probably. To be sweeping the floors again. Maybe he's planting seeds. You know, they make mention of that concept of planting the seed a couple of times this episode. So maybe that's what he's doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it's funny that how he said, leave your clothes here, because I didn't put two and two together that he was actually wearing a bellboy's uniform. I thought that was just his.
Oh, God. If Nucky is a picture on his desk next episode, I'm out.
I thought he was. I thought it'd be really funny if, you're getting fired plus all those clothes you got on, taking a shirt off your back too, kid, and I beat it.
Yeah, yeah.
We flash forward to future Nucky, which is still past Nucky by our point of reference.
Sure.
And he's kind of waking up from a drunken stupor. His wife is still there, and she's talking to Grandpa Gus. Which I think we've heard his real name for the first time. His name is Archimedes.
Wow. Okay.
And she's trying to say, oh, that's a mouthful. And she's, I guess, trying to Americanize him. She's trying to help him lose his Cuban accent. Mm-hmm. Nucky wakes up and is like, what the fuck is going on? He finds out his plane to Havana has been canceled because it's very stormy and the plane's none too good.
Yeah.
Back in the 1930s.
No, not great.
When the water dissolves the spit that's holding the bailing wire together, so you can't fly in those conditions.
Sure.
He asks how the kids are, but that lasts two sentences. He's like, let's get to why you're here. And she catches him up on basically 7 years of history in a couple minutes. Mm. That's about all to that scene.
Yeah, I forgot to ask the question. You brought this up where the Commodore is kind of seems maybe more advanced as far as racial matters go than most people of the time. Do you think that's actually the case, or is this kind of just the thing that racist people say not to be perceived as racist?
Well, that's an interesting question and one fraught with peril to answer.
Yeah, he says that the races shouldn't mingle, weren't meant to mingle and all this stuff. Is that is his view on this what makes Nucky a little more tolerant of the whole racial issues back
then? But we've talked about that. Nucky is not exactly enlightened.
No, he's not. But you have to also put it in perspective of the time period.
Sure.
And I think
that's
he's more enlightened than many of the people on the show.
It's certainly. Like we're talking about the Nick, how there's virulent racists on that show. And then you meet some of the progressive types that are kind of championing the causes of the black folk in New York, and you find out that they're kind of in their way just as patronizing.
Yeah.
There's no malice there, but they clearly don't expect from this, a black man what they would from a white man in terms of social graces, in terms of intellectual achievements. It's very, again, patronizing. So I think that's, he doesn't consider himself racist, but when you said, hey, no offense to the blacks, but the races shouldn't mingle.
Yeah.
That's a horrifically racist thing to say.
Sure. Yeah.
That is the seeds of Jim Crow and segregation and all that. So
I feel like he's, he's definitely a racist because that's what people were back then. But also, I think he's a businessman first and foremost.
Yes.
And if he can make money, and that's the kind of thing that I think Nucky takes away from him, is if there's money to be made, it doesn't matter about your skin color.
Right. Before we move on, I want to talk about Margaret. She makes a statement about You know, Nucky's kind of impressed that she's puzzled all this stuff out and gone her own way. And she said, I did what I thought you'd do, mm-hmm. which wasn't a first of many statements that kind of reinforced the fact that she, like she says later on, he made the powerful impression upon her.
She broke bad a little bit, right?
She broke bad a little bit.
Yeah. I'm still Skylar super confused. Skylar White?
Skylar Light. Skylar White Light. Don't start this lucky night. It's too early in the podcast to get me this turned up, man.
I know. So I still don't understand this Margaret thing. I do not fucking understand it. Like, she... So Arnold Rothstein clearly got fucked in this deal.
Not literally. She wants to make everyone aware that he didn't literally get fucked in this deal.
Was he aware that he was getting fucked?
No. It seems like Arnold Rothstein and her had a profitable relationship. Arnold Rothstein died, and then this broker guy decided to start pillaging his bank account.
I'm talking even before that. Like, when he walks in to this real estate deal, which we know is a scam, uh-huh. right? We knew before we saw Arnold Rothstein there that
Arnold
it was a
Rothstein
scam.
Knows it's a scam.
That's the thing. Like, if he knows it's a scam, why is he going in on it?
Well, no.
Does he have some other ulterior motive?
So this is like, okay, you seen The Wolf of Wall Street?
Sure.
Just because they're pushing the scams does not mean that this stock brokerage can't sell legitimate stock as well.
So yeah, I feel like
Arnold is using it just as a brokerage firm, and he's having Margaret call him and saying, hey, here's what the stocks are doing, or here's what they're about to do. He makes the shorts and buys.
Okay.
And then he makes money on those – on that. It's insider trading.
So he wouldn't have gone with this firm if – with this brokerage if he didn't have Margaret there. Right? Because, like, why do you go with someone who's clearly dishonest unless he has that inside track?
That's a good question because he didn't know Margaret was there. I think that at this point, Arnold was desperate. So he was maybe willing to do a little bit more gambling than he's ever done in his life.
Okay.
But then he saw Margaret as a chance to once again stack the deck in his favor.
So there was...
What I don't understand is why Margaret let this guy... Like Nucky said later on when they're having lunch, he's like, so how much did you skim off the top? She's like, nothing. None. He's like, that's dumb.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
If you're going to take the fall
for... If you want me to sign these papers for you, you're going to give me 25 cents on the dollar.
Hell yeah. This guy's dead. You and I both know it.
Okay, so there was no revenge plan in Arnold Rothstein's...
That was...
Like, that was something I conjured up in my head, and I thought, like, perhaps. He's just too smart of a guy to be taken.
Right.
And so now he's going to take them back because... But yeah, that never panned out.
We go to Chicago, and we see Al Capone is hosting his own screening of the newsreel short Under the Influence of Public Enemy Number One.
Oh, God.
And this is, we find, the third time that he's watched it. Maybe the second time he's going to rip off number three. Lucky Luciano, he is not impressed. Or he's, I don't know. What is his deal? Did he like Al Capone? Is Al Capone like him?
I don't think Lucky likes Al Capone at all. I think he realizes that Al Capone is too worried about his image, right? Too worried about being a big star.
Sure.
Less concerned with actually running a business that's going to survive.
Al Capone, Joe Pesci's from Goodfellas, some poor schlub. Luciano recognizes Van Mueller before he walks out the door. And Al Capone kind of has his bad taste in his mouth because he knows that Lucky is kind of shining him on a little bit. They're kind of humoring him, and he doesn't like it. But he wants to watch it a third time. How many fucking times do you think?
As many times as he wants to.
That's good answer. Good answer. Nucky, little Nucky, we're back in the past, goes home to find his younger brother Eli burning ants. Mm-hmm. He also sees some boots on the porch.
Yep.
He goes around back and jumps up onto the wood bin or whatever you call that, the wood pile, to look in, and he sees his mom getting plowed. When I first saw this episode, I thought sure that this was to suggest that his mom was taking up hooking on the side to make ends meet. But it turns out, I think, after I've read some message boards and stuff, that were to imply that his dad has come home to marital rape his mother.
Okay.
And that's what Nucky's referring to when he comes home and hurts his mom. What's your take on that? Is that a John or is it his dad?
No, I thought it was his dad.
Huh.
I buy it.
Yeah, I don't. So anyway, Eli wants to see, and Nucky's like, fuck no. These are one of these older brother things. I'm taking the mental scarring, kid. And he beats Eli down, which I thought was interesting. It's a good setup for their later relationship in life because they fight all the fucking time.
Sure they do.
And Nucky always wins. Mm-hmm. And Eli's kind of a bitch about it. And then Nucky always makes him eat grass.
Yeah, when you say, like, settle down, stop fighting, but you're rubbing grass in their mouth, that's not fair.
It's like, this is where it starts. Grass is going in your mouth. If you don't stop, I'm going to start dribbling saliva, and then it's going to be butt cheeks on your nose. Uh-huh. That's the hierarchy. You didn't pull any of this shit with your little brother?
Sure, I did, yeah.
Okay. Did you ever get to, like, the spit dribbling on his face stage, or what was your favorite way to torment him?
Nah, we didn't fight that much, but yeah, I mean, there was some grass rubbing.
Sure. All right, grass rubbing. We flash forward back into the future, and Sally Wheat, Miss Wheat, is talking to Nucky over the phone from Havana, disappointed that he's not going to be there with her. She's saying Roni is expecting his good faith, Moni, and he's going to want it. And Nucky kind of is distracted and says, well, kind of, you know, use your good judgment. And she hangs up on him. Hmm. He's distracted because Joe Kennedy is in his parlor and he's entertaining Margaret and flirting up a storm. There was this inset of their ankles bobbing up. This is classic Irish Catholic flirting, I guess. You get the ankles in ever closer orbital patterns until eventually they touch.
They interlock.
Oysters are exchanged, and 9 months later she has an Irish Catholic baby. I think that's how it works.
Yeah, oyster birth.
Yeah, sure. Birth by oyster. He does say, look, this deal is not for me. Scotch and rum don't mix.
Which I've never tried.
Nah, I wouldn't do it.
I could try it now.
Not with that scotch. We got to get some shittier one. It seems like Joe Kennedy is disparaging Nucky every chance he could get.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, when he was trying to woo Nucky, he was making this big show of, hey, we're Irish Catholics and, you know, the upper class Brahmins, they look down on us and, you know, you and I and kind of making the show of this respect. But I felt like he was trying to out Irish Nucky. Now, part of this might be because
he's flirting with Margaret.
He didn't know that Margaret was Nucky's wife.
Girlfriend,
let alone wife.
But then when he finds out, then he goes into his Gaelic, right?
And Margaret's Irish. Like, she's just off the fucking boat Irish. Uh-huh. And he can do the Gaelic. I don't even know that Nucky can.
I don't think so. I mean, never seen it.
He's big in the Irish community of Atlantic City because, you know, I remember in one of the season one or two, they had the big, you know, Irish ceremony.
Yeah.
They got broken up and, you know, they had all their green banners and all that stuff on. But the Atlantic City Irish community might be a notch or two less Irish than the Boston Irish community.
Sure, I could imagine that.
Shit, I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of. I'm a Kraut, not but a mix. I don't understand it.
Just speaking from what we've seen on the show, I've never seen Nucky speak any Gaelic, so I don't know that he can. So yeah, you might be right. He's trying to one up him there.
Margaret is thoroughly entertained by Joe's witty banter. And I'm starting to think he has more than 9 kids. He might have 9 legitimate
kids. He doesn't know about?
Yeah, he might have more than 9 legitimate kids.
All right.
Invites him on a private train car where he's laid in oysters so I can lay you in. Mm-hmm. Then when he finds out he's married to Margaret, he kind of patronizingly calls him sport and says, safety in numbers. I don't know. I just feel like he's being unnecessarily a dick to Nucky.
Yeah.
Do we see Joe Kennedy the rest of the series?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because if we don't...
I'm going to say no. No.
We know Nucky can't... I mean, he can't obviously damage Joe Kennedy because the Kennedys are a thing.
And he basically closed off the entire deal this time. Said, yeah. I don't want your scotch or your rum. Yeah, I don't think we see him again. I really don't.
All right, bold prediction. We go back in time again to little Nucky and Eli sitting on the beach. Nucky had offered them to get a cornball, whatever horrifying.
Yeah, 1800 snacks are nowhere near. Good. Like
1800 candy.
Give me some fucking Dippin' Dots or something. Like, I don't want your cornballs. Thanks.
1800 candy was like lard and a little and aspirin. They ground up aspirin into some lard. They wrapped it in cellophane and say, here, kids, suck on that.
Dipped it in corn. Uncooked corn.
Just. It's just a ball of corn.
Yeah.
Held together with spit and baling wire. Eli is saying, hey, what grade am I going to be in? Are you going to help me with school this year? And Nucky's kind of clearly impatient with him and saying, Luke, you got to start figuring out things for yourself. Mm-hmm. And he goes on this rant about how you don't know how people live.
Eli never does figure anything out for himself, by the way.
Not really, except for how to have a large, happy family.
That's true. Yeah.
He does have the family life all over Nucky. And that's the one thing he kind of lords over him, too.
Yeah.
But Nucky goes on this rant about how you don't know how people live and, you know, we're supposed to have 10 starch shirts and 3 shoes and we're supposed to be doing nothing. And here we are, you know, working our ass off for $1 a day. And, Eli gets uncomfortable, says, you're yelling like pop, man. Settle down, simmer down. Again, I'm extremely impressed with these actors that they've got here. Mm-hmm. Less impressed with their posture.
Oh God.
Forget coming into the room like a question mark.
Uh-huh.
You shouldn't just slouch around like a question mark. That's how scoliosis happens, man.
The problem is his spine is shaped like a question mark. He can't come in a room any other way.
That was actually super cruel of the Commodore to point that out to a young child.
You walk in here like a fucking pretzel, kid.
What an asshole. We go down to Cuba in present slash 30s day. And Miss Wheat is flirting with, I assume, is their banker or maybe their lawyer or whoever, their financier. Because she's saying, yeah, that's all great about these obvious sexual innuendos that you're getting yourself quite worked up into. But I want all my money out of the account.
Okay.
And we see, interestingly enough, that he goes to get her money, shuts the door. But we can see before he shuts the door, there's lots of soldiers or maybe national police. Lots of ominous meanings, and they kind of make pointed glances at her. I didn't suspect this. I just thought this was kind of laying the foundation for revolution and the upheaval coming to Cuba. Mm-hmm. But it seems like that maybe there is a plot specifically aimed towards her and her involvement with this Ronis guy.
There was a gun specifically aimed at her.
Several. Nucky, we find back in the little Nucky age. Start calling that the Bronze Age. Okay. Bronze Age Nucky, because we'll have Silver Age, I assume.
It's true, yeah.
So Bronze Age Nucky is sneaking into the hotel, grabs one of the room keys, goes up and shows his brother a flushing toilet, which is – I don't know that I could get my son to have that reaction if I showed him a working fusion reactor. Kids today are jaded as shit.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I mean, there's nothing you can do to impress them. What are you – I mean, maybe take them to a live space shuttle launch, except for they've shit-canned those, so I have to take them to Russia to do that now, and that's no sale. But anyway, flushing toilet, big hit. It's basically the World's Fair, Bronze Age, whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting. It feels to me like Nucky is starting to get a taste for the finer things in life a bit.
Flushing toilets.
You know, well, I mean, compared to where he comes from.
Compared to an outhouse –
yeah, that's a pretty big deal.
You know,
but you're kidding. I don't have to go out in the freezing cold and to take a shit. Or I can just go in this room.
Or in the height of summer when your brother doesn't shut the seat and it's just fumigated with fermenting shit. Sure,
horrifying. But he talks about that. He talks about, you know, the people coming to vacation in Atlantic City and all they do is sit around on the beach and they don't have a job. Like he's starting to get the taste for riches, you know, and the things that brings him.
Sure.
Even this early, so.
Totally, you know, I get that. Nucky is having lunch with his wife at his favorite Italian place. I don't think he's going to try to make her eat a whole baby cow like he did Joe Kennedy. But he's making a huevos testicles joke. And she's trying to figure him out. Because he's like, you know, what I care if you fuck Joe Kennedy. And she's like, do you? And, you know, what would you suggest? I'm not suggesting that. Like she says, he's just so inscrutable. She says a bunch of contradictory things throughout this episode. Like, I thought you're inscrutable, but you're easy to figure out. No, you're really inscrutable. You're a bastard. You're not a bastard.
It's how much he's kind of changed since she last knew him, right?
Hmm.
Like, he's changed so many times is the problem.
Has he?
Because when he's, well.
I feel like I'm martyring you. Has he?
So when they first met, he was pretending to be this very nice family guy, super
champion
about
of prohibition
kids.
And top temperance.
Absolutely. And then once she met him and I guess fell in love with him, then it changed. He was all about business and he was doing horrible things in the name of that. And, you know, now it's been years and years since they've spoken, presumably.
It's interesting, though.
And he's kind of getting back on the bandwagon of, I want to leave a legacy and I want this family thing and I'm not so interested in the things that have come along with my business, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a little Walter White here with Nucky's situation, but I feel like this fundamental difference is Nucky was honestly surprised at how much violence there was with the booze trade. Like, he was thinking that this is going to be just another piece of graft, you know? Mm-hmm. The rich are going to have a way to get around it, and, you know, I'm going to have a way to supply it, and it's not going to be that big a deal. He didn't see, like, how much blood was going to be shed. I don't know if he knew that, would he have gotten involved with it?
Good question.
Because in 1931, it doesn't seem like it's gotten him jack shit.
Yeah.
Except for a lot of heartache and grief. Anyway, there's also a little bit of flirtation between them as far as what to do with Miss Rothstein. Yep. That she keeps on, he keeps on hinting there's a solution and she keeps on guessing what it is. Mm-hmm. Is Margaret suggesting that they kill Miss Rothstein?
When they're sitting at that table and they're saying, I don't know if you're suggesting what I think you're suggesting, but if you're suggesting that I'm suggesting what you think I'm
saying, it gets really confusing. I'm not saying no.
Yeah, yeah. I felt like it was one of those, it'd be a shame if something were to happen to it sort of deals from like Margaret was assuming that that's where he's going, but he kind of wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to the, let's pay her 25 cents. Let's make this, mm-hmm. and let's make it very fucking
clear. Make it a negotiation.
That this is the only payment.
Yeah, you sweat her every last penny so she knows that she tries to come back.
Yeah, and make it not easy for her, right?
Although the one thing I don't understand about that gameplay is, how is this dissuading Miss Rothstein from trying to do this again? Like, you make it hard, but she's still got the same stick that she had in the beginning that she can just...
She does.
Yeah.
Yeah, blackmail is a slippery slope.
Exactly.
It always is.
So, I don't know. Maybe then Nucky's like, well, then we'll ice her.
Yeah.
We're in Chicago, and it seems like Al and Lucky and Al's brothers and minions are getting along very well. They're talking about Johnny and how he's retired to growing tomatoes, which I thought was an obvious Godfather reference.
Mm-hmm.
Al does a killer Torrio impersonation.
Uh-huh.
They talk
off
about
my neck.
Lucky gives Al a Empire State Building replica.
Yep.
And he says, put on the desk next to my elephants, which sets off the Al Capone telegraph game where people just start shouting, you know, Empire State Building, next to elephants, desk, elephants. It's like ridiculous.
Yeah. Same thing when, find me Mueller. Mueller, where's Mueller? Everybody get Mueller.
I'm not saying that little round ball of man that got beat to death in this episode deserved to get beat to death.
Mm-hmm.
But he kind of got on my nerves every single time. Like, all his purpose is to laugh at people's jokes and to be a megaphone.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of seems, I don't know.
Well, you get in trouble when you start making your own jokes. What you got to do is you got to laugh at Capone's jokes.
But not
never step out of line.
Never be the first to laugh. Never be the last to stop. Never be the loudest. Yep. Never interject your own wit when you have none.
Exactly.
And you still probably will get to beat to death and maybe you'll get another 6 months.
Yeah.
Because nothing's saving you from the combination of cocaine and syphilis in this man's brain.
No, no.
I did some research about there was an auction a couple years ago where they auctioned a whole bunch of stuff from his estate. And some of it was private letters from his physicians and photographs of him, like, very late in life. This man was ravaged. I guess when he died that they estimated his intellectual capacity was somewhere between a 7- and 10-year-old.
Okay.
Entirely. And his septum, which is the – you know, actually, I'm not sure what a septum is.
It's I know part it's of your nose.
It's part of your nasal cavity, but it was almost entirely eaten away.
Mm-hmm.
And that can happen from frequent cocaine use, but also can happen, as if you watch The Nick, you'll find out, very graphically, it can happen from untreated syphilis as well.
Hmm.
He had both. So fuck Al Capone, I guess.
Yeah, I like how he's always...
Yeah,
he's
no. Yeah,
like, just, he's also got like the cocky sniff too.
Uh-huh.
So it's like a double layer sniffing ordeal here.
It's a sniffception.
Where he's like, he'll say something, you know, that he thinks is funny and he'll sniff.
Uh-huh.
But you don't know if it's a coke or whether he's just a cocky asshole.
I tell you, Lucky shifts entirely into Stringer Bell mode. He's like, you know, we should run this more like a business. You know, you shouldn't
great
have
idea.
You shouldn't have to have different rules depending on what city you go to and different exchange rates and all that stuff. And all of us, meaning Italians, we should have the same understanding, same rules. It's not our hand in your pocket. It's not you getting less. It's us getting all more. I mean, that's total a Stringer Bell pitch. However, I have a question. I'm surprised that Lucky, because I think he sees Al Capone as a peer, even though Al Capone is a boss in his own right, and he's just still a lackey of
and I think that's Maranzano. Part of the disrespect card that Mueller plays as well.
Certainly. But the problem I have with Lucky's pitch is that it seems fundamentally dishonest to pitch this to Al Capone when you yourself are damn well aware of the fact that you are actually in league with Jews. Like, how can you, we got to peel off the Nucky Thompsons and everybody's not Italian when the core nucleus of your takeover group involves a bunch of Jewish gangsters?
Yeah, he just hasn't played all of his cards yet, right?
Is he going to fuck them? Because that's the one asked. I will say that I've gotten spoiled on a lot of historical spoilers.
Yeah.
But the Luciano gang is one thing that I've been – I know that eventually – you know, I can't even say that because that would be considered a spoiler.
Okay.
I'm just trying to say that I've stayed largely spoiler free from that storyline. And I'm not asking people to email me because I don't mind being spoiler free. Mm. But I wonder if he's going to fuck over Meyer. Like his luck. Because who is he loyal to?
Himself?
Yeah. So it's like
he just wants to be the boss.
There's nothing that in his character that tells me that he won't do something like that. In his end game, once he consolidates his powers, like, hey, Meyer, fuck off.
Yeah.
Thanks, but no thanks. You're out.
I can totally see that. He's got the right idea, though. I mean, turning this into a business that's run like a business makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Sure.
Capone views it differently, like he's given up a piece of the action that he's got already.
Well, Capone's the boss. He runs this town.
He's like, what, you're going to take a cut of my stuff? No, that's not going to happen.
So he also says, hey, at this point when he starts talking about, you know, think of us 10 years ago, and that kind of jogs his memory. He starts talking about that Jaboni from before, the wooden Indian. The Mueller guy, he's like, hey, I know him. He pinched me and Jimmy Darmody. Al Capone's like, who?
Yeah.
And the Michael D'Angelo gulps and mugs.
Could you look
so
any more guilty?
Hard. But the only thing that saves him is nobody's eyes are on him. They're all on Lucky and Al. Mm-hmm. But he's like, I thought that was pretty funny. Everyone goes off to get Mueller because Al Capone wants to get to the bottom of this. Mm-hmm. I think we're ready to move on. Oh, Andrew T. sent in a historical fact. They mentioned the Chicago Board and Trade Center. He says the tallest building in Chicago is the Chicago Board and Trade. It's a statue of the Greek god Ceres on top of it that has no face because the artist never thought there'd be a building taller so that no one would notice. Why bother carving a detail if no one's going to see it? I, in research, unrelated to that point, found out that this statue of the Empire State Building was a bit of an anachronism too. Because in 1931, it did not have the very tall radio tower attached. It just had kind of like the dome and a very small spire. So this is a modern day mock-up of the Empire State's
I had Empire one of those Strikes when building.
I was a kid. Did you?
Like a smaller version of it?
Did you beat someone to death with it?
I can't talk about that. But
it's almost perfect for that. You got the bludgeony end.
Yeah.
And you got the stabby end. And was there a doubt in your mind that was going through someone's eyeball or up their ass before the end of the episode?
You know, I didn't think about it until after the fact. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Silly of me, I know.
Because to me, that was, as someone on Facebook said, Chekhov's Empire State Building as soon as I saw it.
I just can't believe the concept of the Empire State Building in the early 1900s is fucking incredible to me.
That they built that thing?
That they could build something like that.
That is once again the tallest building in New York?
Yeah. It's insane. It's absolutely astounding.
I'm constantly amazed at how high tech things were. Like, especially when you read like World War II, you know, other than things being bigger, like they had everything was recognizably modern. They had jet technology, radar technology, microwaves. I mean, everything. What
they
the fuck?
They fucking split the atom.
Yeah, what have we invented? In World War Honestly, II. Besides the internet,
space shuttles.
All thanks to Al Gore. What have we? Nah, spaceship's just a big jet plane. Space shuttle's just a big jet plane.
Get out of here.
No, you get out of here. The internet.
Teflon, motherfucker.
We had Crisco and pans. We had nonstick. So anyway, we should move on.
Yeah.
Nucky is doing some kind
of... Wait, before we move on. Why do you think he doesn't remember Jimmy? Is it the coke? Is it the syphilis? Is it all of the above?
Certainly that would fully explain it without any other explanation. Okay. However, there is a couple compelling things I've seen on Reddit where this was Al playing dumb so that he could... Because he's kind of already cooled on the Lucky idea. He was planning on warning Nucky from that scene. So he's like, who? What? Yeah. Huh? And pretend like he just to really, you know, rub Luciano's belly and put him to sleep.
I really don't buy the Capone is that calculating. Capone is a fucking thug in my mind.
But he's running the city. Like, yeah, I get it. He's a crazy person. But he still has quite a bit of cunning.
Yeah, I feel like he's just coasting off of what Torrio did for a large portion of it.
Maybe like it's been off, 7 years,
off of
Torrio,
off of his brother's health.
It's been 7 years. Yeah, his brother doesn't seem like he's... He seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders.
And more so than Capone, yeah.
Nucky is, I don't know, pretending like he's drowning in a bathtub for some reason. And when his brother Eli wakes him up, says, we did a bad thing. And guess what? Sheriff Hammer is there ready to bust him. And there's a hilarious scene where... Nucky's asking his brother if he's got any money, because if you pay this guy, he lets him go. That's how it works.
Nickel. A nickel is all it's going to take. Yeah.
That's like at least $1.50 in 1930s money.
Great.
That'll get you into King Kong or Gone with the Wind or whatever was playing at the time.
Yep.
I think it was King Kong during the Great Depression, because it's surprising how much fucking money that thing made adjusted for inflation. Anyway, we should move on. Margaret is hilariously during lunch getting progressively more drunk. And here's the scene where I started remembering why I liked Margaret in the beginning. Her and Nucky, Kelly and Steve, have really great chemistry in these scenes.
Yeah.
Like her drunken Irish last routine goes really well with his. He's drinking just as much. It's just his liver is cast iron.
Yeah, yeah.
It is no joke, and he's having no problems with it. But she's starting to slur and starting to, you know, lose herself a little bit. I don't know. It's interesting to watch two former lovers, two flames, reconnect, and they kind of dance around. You know, who have you had sex with? Or who have you had sex with?
Yeah, yeah.
Is Margaret being honest? We know Nucky's not. Or is Nucky talking more in terms of love and less of sex?
That might be the case. I don't know about Margaret. Margaret seems like she was basically alone in her new life until Rothstein showed up.
Yeah, I know.
And even then, you know, he didn't do much.
Women got needs too, man.
Sure.
She said, are we, you know, at the end of it, because they start getting things get a little heated about, you know, who was married and who cheated on who. And she said, are we having a fight? I can't even tell. He said, you know, we've had all the fights we're going to have. And they have a handshake that lingers into a hand holding and, you know, kind of end scene.
Yep. Are they back in the saddle?
We will see, Jim. We will see.
This was the scene out on the boardwalk.
No, not yet. No, this is still lunch.
Okay, not the 25 cents.
She's still drinking. She's still drinking. Apparently, they stayed there all fucking day.
I guess so.
So, Mueller's being interrogated.
It was a buffet. He wanted to get his money's worth.
All you can drink buffet.
Yep.
Mueller's getting interrogated. This scene is black comedy at its finest. It's hilarious. Because they're asking him, like, all these questions, and he's got, like, a pat answer for every one of them.
Uh-huh.
His cover story is ironclad. I was really impressed with the answer to how do you fuck up a wheat farm?
Yeah, brown rot? Brown rust?
Brown rust, yeah. It destroys the leaf.
I feel like he might have been a farmer
family. In his youth, yeah.
Yeah, he might have been living with a farmer family when he was young.
Or he could have been a farmer. I mean, we don't know anything about his life before he became a prohi.
Yeah.
So I like the line about, you know, he asked Al Capone, if, you know, do you think I'm an idiot? And he's like, no, successful man's an idiot. He's like, well, why aren't you successful? He's like, I get a feeling that my boss doesn't like me. He's killing it, man.
Yeah. If you can make Al Capone laugh.
Right.
You're in a good situation.
And the whole, like, get on your knees because I ain't reaching up that high. And he puts a gun in his mouth and he's just mugging, like, you know, he. I'm just thinking how ridiculous this is to film if you're Michael Shannon. You have a gun in your mouth and you're literally doing the wah, 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 you know,
Sure, yeah.
And he has this really, like, I can't think that fast on my feet. I'm a little tongue-tied just on a fucking podcast. Mm-hmm. He's got 30 seconds to plead for his life. And he says the exact magic combination of words that will save it. And
he doesn't even remember it after the fact, right? He's like, I didn't do that on purpose. That's just what came out.
He was really turtling. He was really trying hard not to crap his pants. You know, the whole shit or go blind, I think both were on the table there. And he somehow staved off both. That deprived his short-term memory of the oxygen and blood that it needed to form those. But I just think he instinctively went for the disrespect card. I mean, that's
– yeah.
Mueller, for being a sociopath, does seem like he does understand what kind of pressure and how to play Capone better than almost anybody, but except for his brother maybe.
Yeah, he understands what makes Capone tick, and I think he understands it on a base level that even he's not aware of really.
Sure.
Because like you said, he doesn't remember what he said, but it just came out. And really, if he doesn't understand who and what Capone is, appealing to someone's pride like that at that moment, to someone who's more level-headed and understands what you're trying to do, probably doesn't work.
Because we see how deluded Al is when he takes the gun out of the guy's mouth and says, "See? You can rule by love or you can rule by fear."
Yeah.
Like, get the fuck out of here.
You know which one you're choosing.
No, he doesn't.
On a daily basis. That's a thing that I'm saying, like, you should know that.
Because I think if you take a pal, it's like, if you take Capone, he's like, yeah, we're all pals. We're laughing. It's like a frat boy environment, except for everyone else is terrified. You're going to snap at any moment.
But he doesn't really get that. And, you know, the idea that he's a big celebrity now and doing movies and talking to journalists and stuff, that also feeds into this idea in his head that people love him. He's a star. People love this guy.
Sure. I may have soiled myself. I don't know. I thought that was a little much.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't the "why must it always be pandemonium."
No. I mean, if him going to the throw up, I would have bought. Mm. But him literally shitting his pants or not sure if he shit his pants, I thought that was a little...
When I shit myself, I know that I shit myself.
Sure. But have you ever shit yourself with a gun in your mouth? That's the question.
Not yet.
you're leaving it open. You're not closing the door on that chapter of your life yet.
I'm not a prophet. I'm not a... fortune teller.
Oh, Christ. We go down to Cuba, and Ronis, we find out his wife's going to Paris for the summer because she can't fucking stand him. Don't blame him. Blame her. He's kind of a creepy, greasy dude. Mm-hmm. She mentions Miss Wheat, there's an uprising in Habara, which is right next to his cane fields.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, that's what the money's for. You know, the money, I need the money, so I have the soldiers. I need the soldiers to protect my cane fields, and, you know, that's how you make rum. And
yeah, it's tough when the soldiers turn on you.
She goes and calls Doyle, which I thought Doyle, for being a massive douchebag, actually was fairly smooth. Like, if you didn't know Doyle, what he looked like and his creepy laugh and what a colossal fuck-up he is, you'd almost say that he had a silver tongue.
That's the thing. I don't know that I would hate Doyle if it weren't for seasons one through...
Three. Yeah.
Once he ditches that laugh and starts actually running the operation and keeping his shit under control, he's okay.
What's
now.
Up with that laugh? Because we haven't seen it forever. Was he like too far up Eddie Cantor's ass? Like he thought he himself was a vaudeville guy?
Maybe.
Hey, Eddie's getting laughs by being this really fake, outlandish character. So I'm going to try on the floppy shoes and Bozo the Clown and see where it gets me.
Interesting.
He's still got some of that cadence, but a lot of the more annoying things has really been toned down. So she calls and she says, "Hey, I did the dirty deed," but she sees the scale of the packing and you can kind of see the wheels grinding in her head. Like, wow, is this really just his wife? Is he fleeing the country? Am I ever going to see this money again? What the fuck? I have no idea what to make of this because as far as I know, Bacardi's still making rum.
Okay.
I don't know if the Ronis family is still involved, but if they had all flown to Europe during the Cuban uprising, maybe they finally got that plant in Texas built or whatever, or Mexico. That was what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
So
could be. I don't know.
I don't think we have a Bacardi bottle. We need to get one so we can find out where it's being bottled now, because that will that's the key. Drinking a bottle of rum will unravel this whole season for us. So
it'll unravel more than that.
We should get right on that. The sheriff takes the two boys, the two Thompson boys. We're back in the Bronze Age. Sits him down on the bench, in his dark bench, and says, "Don't move." I thought maybe they're getting booked. He's like totally Law and Order.
I didn't know what's going on here.
Eli hilariously confesses that he has a nickel in his shoe, that maybe it's still not too late to try to buy this guy off. Find out that they're being scrubbed up to eat with the sheriff's family. And we see Nucky trying to copy the manners of these people that, you know, we see Mr. and Mrs. Lindsay talking about the origins of Prohibition and the Women's Temperance League, and how as a sheriff he should come out and talk about the stories and the dangers and, of alcohol.
Yeah, it seems like the sheriff is not at risk for making women suffer. He doesn't seem like a bad guy.
No, he doesn't. He's definitely morally compromised, though. Like the kind who goes out,
drinks, comes home, and beats his wife. Doesn't seem like that.
But yet, you know, if he's enabling the Commodore's appetites.
That's true. Yeah.
That is its own brand of evil. So I don't really know what to think about this guy. But he's no Ethan Thompson, for sure.
Yeah.
And Nucky doesn't know what to do. He just starts sobbing at the sight of this family that is so full of love, and they have plenty to eat and everything. It's not like the rich do-nothing people at the boardwalk, but it's a far cry from the shithole that he comes from. And
and you got to think that he understands that his father's drinking is contributing to their nasty home life.
Sure.
So when they bring that up, that's got to affect him too.
This is a guy who apparently is kind of maybe a teetotaler. Certainly, is seems like he's on the side of temperance. That's another good point too. Sheriff Lindsay, Sheriff Hammer, the Hammer Lindsay, comforts Nucky and says, "Hey, it's all right now."
Yeah.
So we'll get a little bit more about this relationship. We go back to the boardwalk now. Margaret is clinging to the railing so she doesn't spin off the face of the earth into the inky blackness of space. We find out that the Onyx is in fact now called the Old Rumpus.
Of course. Of course Mickey Doyle is going to change a classy name like the Onyx to the Old Rumpus.
I just don't think you confront the white establishment as the Onyx, man.
Okay, you might be right about that.
I don't know you go Old Rumpus, but, you know.
Yeah, you never go full Rumpus.
You don't go full Rumpus, let alone an old one.
Yeah.
A surly Rumpus, the disreputable, dilapidated Rumpus.
Mm-hmm.
She mentions that nothing ever really changes because he's got men guarding him, he's got plans, and he says things, and he doesn't say things. Nucky cannot say the word nipple.
Yeah, why is that?
Because we still can't.
Nipple.
We still can't say nipple. Not on primetime television.
Can't say or can't see? We could say nipples on primetime television, right?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure my point is that over, well, not over, 85 years into the future, we still haven't even made it to the pasty stage for primetime television. I'm not a big, like, you know, despite my... what I say in a podcast, it's not like I'm like, oh, we got to have nudity and we got to have, I'm not arguing against it on the other hand either, but I'm not okay. Like, I don't think you need to have tits and nipples and ass and schlong out for good storytelling. Just like you don't need to say fuck every other word. You don't need to have gratuitous violence, all that shit. However,
sure. It
is kind of offensive that that's the way we treat our culture, that we cannot, you know, we can handle blood spattering.
Yeah. If he had reached out and cut off his own nipples, not a problem.
Sure. Yeah, you could do that.
But
on basic cable,
don't want to say it.
You couldn't do that you can show a woman with a rib cage pried open like an angel on Hannibal, as long as the rib cage is, so you can just see her beating bloody heart and lungs.
As long as the flaps are
obscuring her nipples.
Yeah, yeah.
Because God knows that would fuck a kid up if he saw that. It's just crazy. You can use racial epithets and sexual slurs on primetime broadcasts, but you can't say fuck?
Yeah.
What the hell? Anyway, so this is Nucky as a product of this Puritan system. He can't confront nipples.
Sure.
Anyway, and they talk about their first impressions of each other. that, you know, he really wanted to save her because if he can save this innocent woman, then maybe he's not so bad himself. And she saw this man who is rich and powerful, but very, very lonely because he had this hotel all to himself. And, you know, he plays that up. He's like, yeah, I'm still lonely. Maybe nothing ever changes. She goes in to kiss him. He talks about a solution for Miss Rothstein and then gets her a room. When she said the words, I have nowhere to stay, do I? That was an invitation to Pound Town, right?
Yeah.
That was inviting him back into the marital bed, and Nucky swerved. What to make of that, Jim?
Man. So he's got to assume that his fling in Florida is still alive, or Cuba, I guess, at this point.
Sure.
Is he still on that train?
Does he know that he's not being fully honest with Margaret, so he's just trying to spare her?
Maybe.
Is he got in mind something for Margaret to do involving Miss Rothstein that's somehow going to deflect? I don't know. There's some kind of plot here. Or maybe he's just trying to be a decent guy.
Trying to keep her far away from him, A, because he's no good, and B, his reputation is no good.
Yeah, and maybe he's seeing that, hey, I've had my fill. This is some broad. This is the kind of woman that I would might want to reacquaint myself with when I hang up the life. So I don't want to get her back into this yet. If I make it out of this smooth sailing, then, you know, obviously there is a ember to be rekindled here.
Yeah.
But if I you know, douse it with a nice cold bucket of Nucky right now, maybe not.
Ugh. You could be right.
Anyway, D'Angelo, the mole in the FBI, is cannot rest about the idea of this Van Alden character being out there, this Mueller character being a brokey, and he pours through these mugshots, finds out, indeed, he's a wanted murderer, an agent on the run.
The gratification that you have to feel after sifting through piles and piles of dossiers, it's got to be outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
Like, finding that needle in the haystack has to feel amazing.
I have had that experience. Like, you're looking for a piece of paperwork that's suddenly relevant 6 months later. And when you finally find it, it's like, aha! I can't even imagine what it's like to, like...
I told you! I knew it was here!
What's he going to do with this info? He can't do anything with it.
He could arrest him, but that totally blows his cover, at least with Van Alden.
He could turn him, so now they have two high-level agents in the Capone Empire.
But if he's not loyal, he's going to out you.
Ooh, but you've got this on him. I mean, that's...
But what does he have to lose at that point? I mean, unless you're offering, like, a pardon for the murder that he committed?
No, it's like, I will take you to jail right now, and you might get the electric chair. Or you can work with me, and a chance we put away Capone, and you get off scot-free.
But then I say, okay, let's work together. And the next time alone with Capone, I say, this guy's a fucking mole.
You're going to go to Syphilis Cokehead and say, I'm a pro-he.
Say, I used to be. Many, many years ago, this guy is one now.
Yeah, because he didn't really lie to Capone.
And
he's
after
like,
all the shit he did for him, maybe he understands.
He didn't really lie to Capone. He's like, maybe I am a pro-he. Maybe I am a bigamist. Maybe I'm a murderer on the run. Yes, yes, and yes. Uh-huh. But that's not quite a lie. But again,
yeah, probably right.
I wouldn't trust cocaine and syphilis to make that distinction for me.
I wouldn't either. You're right.
I already got 130 seconds. The odds you're going to get another pretty low.
So, count to three.
Capone and Lucky say their goodbyes. Lucky shines him on about Wallace Beery one more time. And Capone's angry, calls him a pillow-biting piece of shit, spits at him. They're all having a good line about, you know, everyone being an agent, and everybody's joking around until the beach ball lackey calls him a fucking jerk. That's when Capone, he Joe Pesci's him one final time. Mm-hmm. But it seems like I thought that here that this is totally going to be a joke. And it turns out when he's like, ah, it's too easy. I got this guy again. But then seconds later, he beat him to death.
Yeah. Is jerk like a really horrible thing to say to someone in this period?
I don't think it's worse than calling him a pillow-biting piece of shit. And again... I have no problem with gay people, gay men, gay women. But
at the time,
a gangster in the 30s calling this guy a pillow bite, that's fighting words. calling someone a fucking jerk or a jerk off is not,
you're right,
not the same league of insult, I don't think.
Okay. I was wondering, like, just why he gets so angry. He's just crazy.
He's
just fucking crazy.
He's and the thing is, I don't think he beat the beach ball to death because he's mad at him.
No.
Because he kept on saying Wallace Beery, Wallace. That was all Lucky Luciano that he was wanting to beat to death. Mm-hmm. Which makes me think that he really doesn't like Lucky. But they've been friends for a long time, and I don't know why he doesn't like Lucky. Why is he signing with...
They may have been doing that just to show how crazy he is, and he may not even have been aware of who he was beating.
But then they called it with him obviously throwing his support behind Nucky. He calls for Eli, has a conversation with him. Mm-hmm. To me, he's choosing him over the New York connection. He's choosing... That's
true. He says, we got a problem. His name's Charlie.
His loyalty to Atlantic City is trumping his loyalty to anything going on in New York. Which, I mean, he's been doing that for years. Like, season one, he helped eliminate a rival threat to Atlantic City. Season three, you know, that was a really awesome when him and Chucky and Nucky, Chalky and Nucky, teamed up against Joe DeBoss's gang and ran him out of New York or Atlantic City. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like par for the course, but I don't understand why he has so much animosity for Lucky. Maybe it's just the fact that Lucky acted like he's better than him, even though he clearly is not.
He's an underling, for one. He's not a boss coming to a boss. He's a lackey coming to a boss. Mm. He's offering him what he already has.
Sure.
Like, that's insulting, and we've seen that happen multiple times in Boardwalk Empire. That's just a flat-out insult. Also, like, how does Capone know what happened to Jimmy? How does Lucky know what happened to Jimmy?
I just feel like that's something that gets around in the underworld.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah, people tell people things.
Because I didn't know if Capone even knew that at this point.
No. And that's the thing. It's like, it's an open question. How much of Possum is he playing? It feels like that. More than he's letting on, if his first course of action is to call Nucky and warn him.
Yeah, you could be right.
Laura McPhee on Facebook said, I love how the portraits of Lincoln and Washington were looking down on Al Capone's new American dream while I beat that guy's face in. That was really sweet. He had a picture of Lincoln and Washington on that desk as he just been splattered with blood.
That is historically accurate. Capone actually had those.
No shit.
Up behind his desk in his hotel, yeah.
There you go, man. The father of America and the man who freed the slaves.
Yep.
Looking down. Miss Wheat's down in Cuba. She gets stopped by some kind of roadblock with the police or military. They're saying there's a curfew. You shouldn't be out here. And she says, Quanto, how much? How much is it going to take me to get to where I need to go? He says, you've bribed my men. You've offered us our fill of drink as if that's all our care. You're working with a man who offers a peso a day to cut cane until your hands bleed. You're what's wrong with Cuba. And she says, oh, yeah? Well, I'm going to grab one of your men's guns. You're what's wrong with Cuba. And then she gets gunned down. What seems like the officer is intensely aware that this is going to be a shitstorm.
Yep.
You just killed an American in open.
Yeah, he didn't authorize that. The guy just took the shot.
Where's this going, man? Because one part of, like, so I know you're this struck me as like a very True Blood thing. Like, I feel like Miss Wheat got Al seated in the final season of True Blood. They very matter of factly got rid of a bunch of suitors for the main character to kind of clear the way for the classic pairing.
Okay,
it's very convenient that literally the moment that Margaret walks back in his life, his other lover gets iced.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like now there is no barrier to him. You know, he doesn't have to be a dick to Miss Wheat. He doesn't have, I mean, it's full steam ahead.
Sure, but it also doesn't do much for his prospects of rum running, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, his financial plans are gone to shit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought I saw how the table was set to be run. And now it's like I clearly see how Chicago and New York are going to fit back together. I don't know how Chalky is going to be involved when he comes back. But this Cuba thing now,
It just sounds like this is Nucky's empire falling down, and I think
and what happens
that's if, what we were set up for in this season.
What happens if Nucky made that plane?
Good question. I was thinking that myself.
They're both getting pinched. Now, I don't think that he's much more cautious than she is and sure. less brassy. So I think that they wouldn't have gotten shot up, but it clearly seems that these guys wanted to pinch them. I honestly think they were being shooken down.
Maybe. For what, though?
Money. The large sack of money that
But was, she asked him how much.
Well, but
the guy
was
like, no.
If he's already made arrangements to steal a part of that $111,000 or whatever the hell it was, that was not the amount. We don't know how much good faith money.
Yeah, but she'd already given it to the dude.
Yeah, but they had that ominous conversation with the policeman.
True.
Yeah. So I don't know enough about Cuban politics to speculate. Hmm. But interesting, we go back to the Bronze Age, and little Nucky is driving back home to his father's house with Sheriff Hammer, and he asks if he can arrest his father. And the sheriff says, yeah, kid, but I have to let him go because, you know, it's only mildly illegal to beat your wife nowadays, kid.
Sure.
Maybe I can suspend him for 2 games. Maybe. We'll see. And then he goes, well, maybe it won't be jail. Maybe it'll be whatever you did to the guy that killed that woman for the Commodore. And he seems like he's going to roll really tough. He's like, look, that's Commodore business. You stay the hell out of it. You keep your nose clean. You don't make me do my job as the law. And he kind of lets that sit there. And he goes, now, I'm going to go in there, all three of us. We're going to tell your father you work for me. And if he doesn't like it, he's interfering with the law, and he'll answer for it. And he shakes his hand as Deputy Sheriff Thompson, which I thought was very cool.
Sure.
And it finally brings us to where I think we're going to enter the Silver Age, where Nucky is a sheriff.
Yeah, I think now is a good time to go there.
And we got some great feedback about this relationship and how it ties into future seasons, or I'm sorry, past seasons, which we want to get to. Do you have any other thoughts about the episode?
No. No, I think I'm good. I think, you know, that we're on the back half of this now.
This is the hump. This was we just got through hump day. It's all downhill from here.
And I think it really is all downhill. I think
they don't need to set up anything else.
They say no one goes quietly. This is definitely the downfall of Nucky's empire. His financial plans have gone to shit. He's got this blackmail thing that he's got to deal with. I don't think he's going to be making much more money. I think he's going to end up potentially dead by the end of this thing, but definitely destitute.
So it's interesting because I feel like when Miss Wheat got killed, and now that Margaret and him are looking like they're reconciled, I'm feeling better about him surviving. Because the other thing, it seems like, why are they doing the flashbacks of the Bronze Age and presumably the Silver Age, if not to show us that the fundamental difference between Nucky and all these other guys is he does have a heart. Like, he wants to do good things. He's thwarted by him. He never wanted to be a gangster. He never wanted to be a murderer. These things are kind of forced upon him. Does that count for anything in Terrence Winter's morality? Like, can
Maybe,
he end up
but
destitute?
But save him.
Can he end up destitute but happy? Can he end up like the sheriff, like where he's not rich? But
I'm a little worried when he starts talking about legacy, like things that he wants to leave behind. That to me says he's going to go out, but maybe, you know, he'll have a short day in the sun before he does, and he'll leave something behind.
Yeah, that's scary.
Like a child with Margaret, perhaps.
He's already. No, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't have any actual children with Margaret that are both of theirs. But potentially that'll happen. And, like, you know, well, to find out she's pregnant in the last episode and while Nucky's dying in another scene and potentially. I don't know.
Other thoughts?
Nope. I'm good.
All right. Let's do some pimping. I want to make you aware of a brand new podcast we're doing here in the Bald Movie Empire. Jesse and Eric of Personal Arrogance fame, along with their best buddy, Levi,
never heard of him.
The Rocky Mountain correspondent, personal friends of ours, are doing a podcast on Gotham, the new Fox series called The Gotham Blotter. So Gotham is a great concept that looks amazing, has some pretty good characters, has some pretty good acting and actors, and it suffers from some writing problems. It's Fox's version of The Walking Dead. it's going to be interesting to see, because Walking Dead started off and they kind of fell off. It's going to see whether they can kind of get their legs out underneath them and keep going. Uh-huh. But if you enjoy Jim and I think these guys are super funny. They're very honest. They're not blowing sunshine up anybody's ass. And I'm having a good time. So I want to recommend everybody check out that if you're even passably interested in Batman or Gotham and the series itself. Patreon, thanks to everybody that's signed up. We've got some stuff like right now. If you're a Patreon member, you're not hearing any of this shit because you got an ad free. We just went.
But you might be seeing it.
You might that's be the seeing fucked up it. Thing. You might be seeing. I can't delete the ads live because no. we've actually got a couple of viewers watching this as we're doing it live. But the big milestone we're trying to get to is forums. Just want to stress that this forums, it's something that we want to do to enhance the watching experience, enhance our fan and intra-fan interaction. It's, you know, if you like to participate on our Facebook threads, I think this is going to be even better. And the best part is you won't need a separate login. You can just breeze on through with your Facebook credentials. So it's something really excited, and for Patreon users, you're going to get access to a VIP lounge, where it's just be your fellow Patreon people and me and Jim and other hosts of Bald Moon Network. We're going to be talking about that's how we're going to be planning the voting on the custom podcast content, and we're going to be planning new Bald Move features. So if you want on the inside of that, please go to patreon.com/baldmove. That's patreon.com/baldmove. Of course, we still got Subbable if you want to commission a custom podcast, which we've got a cool one on Barton Fink coming out this week. Very exciting.
Interesting movie. Yeah.
Very, very, very excited about that. You can also use our Amazon link at amazon.baldmove.com. That works for US people only. If you want to use that and you're from a different country, you can go to baldmove.com and click on the banner, and it will shunt you into the appropriate affiliate program depending on where you're from. And we support like a dozen countries now. So thank you, everybody that uses that. I have a new podcast coming up covering American Horror Story. It's probably going to have a preview podcast late this week, and it's premieres next Wednesday. And we'll have the podcast out each Friday afternoon. Very excited about that. My co-host, Cecily, from the True Blood podcast and occasionally from Orange is the New Black, is going to be joining me each and every week. Pretty excited about that.
And co-host from our Walking Dead playthroughs.
Yes, Walking Dead playthroughs leading up to the month of the dead. October is going to kill us, Jim.
It will.
Because you have just jam-packed the full. I tried to tell you you're a madman. It just insane. Wouldn't relent. We've got, you're going to have every week movie reviews of zombie movies leading up, including some classic never released episodes of our podcast covering some of the classic zombie movies. Uh-huh. You're going to have some well-known podcast celebrities from other parts of the Walking Dead sphere. Jason from the Walking Dead podcast.
Chris from the Talking Dead.
Chris from the Talking Dead. Eric Not from... that Chris, the other Chris.
Eric from Walker Stalkers.
So that should be a good time. We're playing through every Thursday night around 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. You can join twitch.tv/baldmove and see our live playthrough of Telltale's Walking Dead. And we're having a lot of fun. It's basically Mystery Science Theater 3000, the video game.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's some silly shit. I mean, stop me if you don't believe this, but it's just some silly shit in a Walking Dead video game, and our number one goal is to be as big an asshole as we can. Mm-hmm. Where Shane is our model. He is our hero. And we're trying to be as big as asshole, and we make as much fun of the game as possible. It's a lot of fun. Please join us on those. And you can see the archives on twitch.tv/baldmove or on youtube.com/baldmove. What else we got, man? We got to have contests for The Walking Dead.
So I hear.
Tons of stuff. Check it out on The Watching Dead. We'll have our preview coming up probably next week or no, the week after. All right, time for feedback. We got a little bit of stuff to talk about. Rosemary from Suffern, New York. I'm sorry to hear Suffrage. You're suffering there, Rosemary. Yeah. You guys have been saying from the beginning of season 5 that you don't know how or why Chalky ended up in prison. I could be wrong on this, but I believe when Hoover approached Narcisse at the end of last season, in addition to pressuring him to help him with Marcus Garvey, Hoover told Narcisse that they planned on pinning Agent Tolliver's murder on Chalky, which is, I assume, what landed Chalky in prison. I'm also assuming they tracked him down at the safe house in Pennsylvania where we last saw him. That is a very good assumption, and I think you're probably sure. Right.
Yeah, lots of assumptions there, but all of them probably good. We don't know for sure.
Until we hear he got pinched on tax evasion, I'm going to go with your theory.
Yeah.
Mike J on Facebook opined that everyone can die, in his opinion, as long as Van Alden makes it through alive to the end of the series. I love that character. Do you feel the same?
It has been a long journey with Van Alden, I gotta say. I despised him at the beginning.
Sure.
Somewhere in the middle, I turned and I said, okay.
He turned into comic relief.
He did.
Did you ever see that coming in season one?
Never. Never. I thought he was going to be the guy tracking down Nucky to the bitter end. Didn't happen.
I mean, even now when he has his occasional General Zod moments, it's really funny.
It's really funny.
He goes and irons a dude's face. He just, you know, why is it always why must it be pandemonium? He worries that, I wish we had 12 full episodes. We keep going full episodes without storylines. For example, this week, no Chalky or Jillian. Yeah, man, I don't know what to say because I'm right there with you. Having 8 episodes sucks, and I don't believe that this was Terrence Winter's idea, no matter how many times he goes on with Alan Sepinwall and claims it is.
Okay.
So, hoping for the best. We'll see. Josh L. says, in season one, Nucky would say that his father used to be the sheriff of Atlantic City when giving speeches and whatnot. When the season's flashback started and we saw that Ethan Thompson was actually a poor fisherman, I thought that this was a continuity error and the writer simply forgot about his early season backstory. However, after watching the flashbacks in this latest episode, maybe it was actually intentional and that the early seasons when Nucky was mentioning his father being the sheriff, he's actually referring to Sheriff Lindsay, because he considered him much more of a father figure than he'd ever considered his own abusive biological father to be.
Okay, yeah, maybe. Or maybe part of the deal where he got boned with the land stuff also involved him not being the sheriff anymore. Maybe he became a fisherman because he got fired from the sheriff position. I don't know.
Okay, so I like this theory. What the hell is the Commodore playing at? Because we kind of skimmed over this, but now that it's broached up in feedback, he calls Nucky into his office. He lays out his vision of Atlantic City, which he obviously had been making Nucky privy to. He's pounding in his head these life lessons about don't use your own money, use other people's money. And then he just dismisses him out of hand, but only before he asks him if he's smart and emphasizing that he needs to get back to his school. Then the sheriff comes in and swoops in and kind of kisses his boo-boos and makes things okay, but also brings him back into the Commodore's machine. Is the Commodore and the sheriff playing this long-form good cop, bad cop to mold Nucky into the person that they want him to be? Or is Sheriff Lindsay / Hammer doing this only because he's altruistic? Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I do. I think we've seen a parallel in this series with Nucky and I think his name is William Thompson.
Oh yeah, Willie, sure.
You know, Eli's boy. They had him going to school down the straight and narrow path so that in the future he could better support the operation. It wasn't the right time for him to get into the actual business, but they were prepping him.
It's a Tom Hagen thing. Like, we need you outside the family business.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
So when we go legitimate, you're right there in the middle of things and you got your hands clean. It looks like we're shitting on you and we're ignoring you, but we've got bigger plans for you, kid, so we need you to do what we ask you to do without question.
I feel like that's a big part of it. I think they're prepping him. They're prepping him and they're testing him at the same time.
So you think the Commodore is involved in this?
I think so, yeah.
I find it hard to argue with you, especially since it's kind of my idea. Jesse K says, I'm writing, make sure I haven't skipped a person's email. Yes, I'm writing to tell you a theory that looks like it's unfortunately not going to come true, but I've seen a few people in different places on the internet suggest this, and I found it kind of interesting. Theory goes that Van Alden will be babyface Nelson. Unfortunately, I think it's too late for this to happen, but the idea has become lodged in my head. Babyface Nelson's name was Lester Gills, and he ran with John Dillinger. I don't know if it's a solid theory, but I'm sure if you did some research, it would fall apart. But I just wanted to send it your way to see what you thought of it. So I did some research.
Okay, good, because I know nothing about this.
And I don't want to do any spoilers, because I just don't know what spoilers I just don't know what people want or mean when they say spoilers anymore, Jim. So I'm like paranoid because I hate when I say something innocuous and people are like, I don't think the time's going to line up, but that's not saying that they might not take that aspect of the babyface Nelson and bring it, you know, have his storyline coincide with, you know, Van Alden. It is interesting that their names are the same, and it is interesting And it's interesting they keep mentioning his mug. However, I wouldn't call this guy Babyface for sure.
Fuck no. I was wondering if Babyface was a, you know, intentional misnomer.
Interestingly enough, you and I both knew.
Like when they call someone small or little whatever, when he's obviously a huge fat dude.
You and I both knew John Dillinger's sister.
Yeah, right?
Some weird random ass thing. She actually was a very old woman in the church you and I grew up in.
When I was a very young man, yeah.
When we go out into usually as field service, although later on we used to go visit her in the nursing home, she would tell us stories about John, who's, you know, obviously you'd imagine she has a very different view as his kid sister than the world at large.
Sure.
But no, little fun fact. Thanks for everybody for sending the feedback. If you'd like to send us more, you can get in at boardwalk@baldmove.com. You can also get in with our live Facebook threads, live watching threads on facebook.com/baldmove. And you can get on get up in Jim's business on Twitter @baldmove. That's all we got for you. Hope you enjoyed the live watch.
And if not, too bad.
So sad. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. Until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. Bye.